no time to get comfortable in this schooling.
Good morning, Your Honor. We're here to request that you reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment. And in applying the de novo standard of review that this court is obligated to apply, that you not weigh the evidence, that you not resolve credibility determinations, and that you apply correctly this court's rules and laws regarding what constitutes sexual harassment and what amounts to a retaliation claim under Title VII. The district court in this case, Your Honor, reviewed, weighed, and rejected the affidavit of the plaintiff, the corroborating affidavit of the plaintiff's partner, the testimony of the lieutenant of the Personnel Concerns Program at the Chicago Police Department, the affidavit and testimony of the former head of the Internal Affairs Police Department, and weighed and rejected all of the exhibits that had been submitted by the plaintiff, largely consisting of business records of the Chicago Police Department, which corroborated and documented the plaintiff's claims of sexual harassment and retaliation. The district court incorrectly applied this court's definition of what constitutes sexual harassment by accepting the city's assertion that only remarks of a sexual nature could amount to acts constituting a hostile work environment under the sexual harassment definitions, and rejecting and ignoring acts and events which were not clearly sexual in nature but were directed to the plaintiff, we contend, based on her gender. The district court concluded that 5 instances of remarks with sexual nature or innuendo were not sufficient. In fact, the plaintiff had identified...
Which of these matters that you're discussing here is in the record?
Which of the specific facts?
Yes.
Innuendos?
I have a great deal of trouble following your brief because the statement of facts in your brief appears to be based entirely on the affidavit that the district court struck and which is therefore not in the record. So the question I'm asking you is, of the things that you think are most important to the case, which of them are actually established in the record?
The remarks directed to the plaintiff by Sergeant Kalenny, how is it going, what's your name, are you married, and do you have kids, do you have a boyfriend, are established in the defendant's statements of fact at R46, paragraphs 46 through 48. That's his initial contact with the plaintiff. The gender-based remark, and that was also the plaintiff's deposition, as well as her affidavit. A gender-based remark in November of 1996 by Sergeant Kalenny outside the roll call room, I'd like to be that FOP book in your back pocket. That was established not only in the plaintiff's affidavit at paragraph 18, but also in the city's statement of fact, R46, paragraph 48. Mm-hmm. The remark of Lieutenant Schrager in November of 96 in the roll call room concerning the incident where he ordered a pregnant female to put on her uniform when the medical section had said that she should not because it was not safe. That's in the plaintiff's affidavit at paragraph 22. There is a physical...
Wait. That's what I asked you to exclude. The district court struck the plaintiff's affidavit in its entirety.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out what the evidence most favorable to the plaintiff is that is established as legitimately being in the record. And of course, we can discuss whether the district court should have struck the plaintiff's affidavit.
Right.
But
so
I just want to make sure I understand what is really uncontested in the record as opposed to subject to contest.
I understand. There's a physical touching by Sergeant Kalenny when Rogers was on duty and he grabbed her. That was established at the city's R46, paragraph 47.
Is this the falling down the stairs?
Yes, it
incident?
Is.
Okay.
It's a statement that we believe is construed one way, the district
right.
court construed it another. Sergeant Kalani's harassing remark when Rogers and her partner were checking out for the day, that's established at plaintiff's partner's affidavit, Exhibit B, paragraphs 4, 8, 9, 11, 12, and 14. In January, Kalani's interference in Rogers' response to a domestic violence call and Rogers' decision to arrest an offender contrary, and Kalani's conduct being contrary to the department's general orders, that's also established at R56, Exhibit B, Kalani's, Rogers' partner's affidavit, paragraph 15.
Now you're going away from the so-called sexual remarks into just what you think are different treatment for men and women. Is that where you're going now?
In this instance, we believe it's harassment, Your Honor.
So
I think, yes, there is differing treatment based on sex as well as in some of these remarks or incidents, which would, in an accumulated perspective, constitute a hostile work environment. Sergeant Kalani's threatening remarks to Rogers and her partner that he had a problem with two of them is also established at Exhibit B, paragraph 15. Kalani's sexually harassing remark to Rogers when she exited the locker room in January of 1997 to the effect that your breasts look nice and that turtleneck you are wearing, that's also established at the city's statement, R46, paragraph 26, and Rogers' partner's Exhibit B, paragraphs 17 through 21, and paragraph 26. Sergeant Kalani's harassment of Rogers while she performed her job, appearing frequently on her calls and jobs, even though not assigned as her rapid response sergeant, that's also established at R56, Exhibit D, paragraph 22, which is Rogers' partner's affidavit. Sergeant Kalani refusing to process or turning back reports prepared by Rogers, that's also established at R56, Exhibit D, paragraph 22, Rogers' partner's affidavit. Sergeant Kalani making a sexual remark during a checkoff to Rogers when he said, "Put it over there so I can watch you walk." That is also established at the city's statement, R46, paragraph 39, and R56, Exhibit B, paragraph 22, Rogers' partner's affidavit. Sergeant Kalani interfering with Rogers during a robbery case, second-guessing her judgment, and ordering her to take actions which were contrary to the department's procedures, that is also established at Exhibit B, paragraph 24, and it's corroborated by exhibits in the record, Exhibits J and Exhibits U, which reflect that there was two separate reports written, one in accordance with Kalani's orders and one not in accordance. Sergeant Kalani stressed that she wouldn't work with her partner anymore when she attempted to cause the sergeant to stop his harassment. That is also corroborated at R56, Exhibit B, paragraph 23, Rogers' partner's affidavit. And Rogers' removal from her partner is corroborated by Exhibit B, paragraph 25, Rogers' partner's affidavit, and the city's paragraph 46, paragraph 21. Those are in excess of 12 incidents, I believe, that occurred between the time of November 1996 and January 1997, when Rogers first made her complaint of sexual harassment to the Chicago Police Department. We would submit, Your Honors, that conduct, including both remarks of a sexual nature as well as remarks which are harassing, in which Rogers was being singled out for treatment different than her partner was, for example, who was a male, as well as being harassed by this particular sergeant who was after her, that those meet this court's test in Sheehan versus the City of Chicago, both remarks of a sexual nature as well as remarks of a non-sexual nature, but harassing and hostile. In addition, following Rogers' complaint of sexual harassment. There is a remark by the lieutenant who, in an attempt not to process a complaint of sexual harassment through the department's procedures, says, "You don't know what you've done. I've got a CR. This is your fault getting me into this. After this CR, I'm going to wash my hands of this, and you were a problem." Those statements are corroborated by Rogers' partner in R56 Exhibit B, paragraph 29, and the city's brief, R46, paragraphs 24 and 28. Rogers' reassignments to positions which did not include her regular rapid response car are corroborated in the exhibits showing Rogers' assignments. But they don't have at the top of my head. But Rogers' assignment, the refusal of Lieutenant Traeger to assign Rogers to details to which she was entitled by virtue of her seniority and which warranted an overtime payment, that is demonstrated by the exhibits. First, the collective bargaining agreement, which spells out the entitlement of a officer to details based on seniority. The collective bargaining agreement is in the record as Exhibit KKK. The actual assignments to officers with less seniority than the plaintiff are shown in Exhibits JJ and KK, in which plaintiff is excluded and younger, less seasoned officers are granted details. Those were all occurring when Lieutenant Traeger was on duty. The irregularities in the police department's processing of its internal investigation procedures, that is established by the affidavit of Dorothy Stewart, who had served as the head of internal affairs or the department advocate in internal affairs for 24 years. She identifies the irregularities in the internal affairs investigation, indicating that the officer failed to investigate the various aspects of Rogers' complaint, refused to consider violations of department procedures by Lieutenant Traeger and by Sergeant Kaleni. The placement of Rogers into the behavioral alert program and the fact that that was done contrary to department procedures, resulting in a physical examination, a urine test, and blood tests in violation of Rogers' Fourth Amendment rights. That is established by the city's brief and the exhibits, Exhibit V, which is the general order prescribing the procedure. I see that my time is up. And I can continue explaining the specifics when I return on my rebuttal time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Scully. Ms. Stemmer.
Good morning. May it please the court. In the interest of the short amount of time I have this morning, I'd like to focus my comments this morning on two of the city's defenses in this case in particular. The city's affirmative defense to her sexual harassment allegations, as well as I'd like to address how Rogers falls short of establishing retaliatory harassment in this case. First, as to her sexual harassment complaint. in this case, the city's response to the sexual harassment complaint that she did make against Sergeant Killaney was appropriate and it was effective in this case. And as, at the outset, I'd like to just point out a mistake in the reply brief where she states that we did not plead this affirmative defense. The defense was clearly pled in the city's answer to her complaint, and the defense is appropriate in this case. The defense is clearly supported by the record in this case, and that's true even if you consider the testimony of Dorothy Stewart and everything else in the record about the course of the Internal Affairs Department's investigation. The city has a well-developed sexual harassment policy, which provided for reporting sexual harassment to a supervisor, or in a case like this, where the immediate supervisor is the alleged harasser, to the next supervisor in the chain of command. And when Rogers complained to Lieutenant Schrager, he immediately reported her allegations to the Office of Professional Standards, and an investigation ensued. And she only complained about sexual harassment by Sergeant Killaney at that point.
Now, is that, she's written or read off a litany of things that occurred at the point where she reported it. What had already occurred? What incidents did she report?
She reported the incident about her breast looking nice in the red sweater. She reported a disagreement she'd had with Sergeant Killaney over whether a report should be written. She reported, I believe, the incident about the FOP book in her back pocket. And I believe there was one other incident.
You say that after this reporting it ceased, I guess.
Yes.
Is that undisputed?
Yes, it is undisputed. That the sexual harassment by Sergeant Killaney, which is all she reported, absolutely ceased after that point. And if you look at her reply brief at pages 9 through 14, where she discusses everything that she alleges happened afterwards, there's not one incident of sexually harassing behavior by Sergeant Killaney after she complained.
Is that where you focus on the retaliation and that sort of thing? Is that where she...
Right. And of course, I'll get to the retaliation in a moment. But as far as our affirmative defense to her sexual harassment complaint, it is clear from the record that there was no sexually harassing conduct by Sergeant Killaney after the point that she complained. Under these circumstances, whatever imperfections that the investigatory process that Rogers complains about had, it was effective in preventing any further harassment in this case. And the city's response was not only reasonably designed to prevent and remedy sexual harassment, but it did so here. And this court recently held in Gawley that under circumstances like these, the affirmative defense set out by the Supreme Court in Farragher and Eller is met. As for her retaliation claims, which she now shapes as retaliatory harassment, she now attempts to shape her retaliation claim as one of retaliatory harassment, lumping together conduct of many different employees from many different divisions within the police department, including everything from her placement in the behavioral alert program, which happened in the personnel division, to an employee in the medical section changing her injury on duty status at a later point. And almost half of her alleged retaliatory incidents that she lays out in her reply brief, and this is assuming that the evidence supports a portion of those or all of those. And over half of them, the conduct that the employee at the police department took, it was taken by an employee who there's no evidence that they even knew about her complaint. Obviously, Rogers is using every complaint she has had about her job since she filed her complaint to bolster her retaliation claim, but there's simply no evidence that many of these people even knew about her complaint. And it's certainly a great leap to assume that they were motivated by it in the various measures that they took. They were doing nothing more than performing the routine functions of their jobs, and she has offered no evidence to show otherwise. As for the conduct by people who did know about her complaint, and Lieutenant Schrager included, there's no evidence that their conduct toward her changed appreciably after she complained. To successfully mount a retaliation claim, you have to prove a rationing up of the harassment. after you filed your complaint. And here Rogers shows no appreciable difference in the nature of her assignments or the course of her daily routine after she made her complaint. Her day-to-day work was by and large the same as before. She disagreed with some supervisory decisions before, and she disagreed with some of them after. But she does not show, for example, that she was sometimes not assigned to dangerous posts before she complained. And we can expect that as a police officer, she may well have been. She does not show that she was never assigned to work alone before, or never asked to change partners, or never assigned a police car that had a problem with it. She has a burden to show that the workplace was altered by the harassing conduct in a way that amounted to a change in the terms and conditions of her employment. She simply can't do that by pointing to anything and everything that has gone wrong at work since, without any evidence that these things were caused by the fact that she complained. For these reasons, her claim of retaliatory harassment fails. If there are no further questions, I will conclude.
Mm-hmm.
For these reasons, as well as those stated in our brief, we ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis.
Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Bogart?
To suggest that Rogers simply complained about every aspect of her job that she didn't like, I think, is to ignore the documentary evidence in the record. Rogers had a 10-year career without incident until she encountered Sergeant Seleni, a sergeant who'd been out of the academy for 6 months, and for whatever reason, which was gender-based, began a focus on Rogers when she came into the 24th District. Rogers left the 24th District in July of 1997 only because she asked to be removed, and the harassment, but for the attempt to discredit her as a rat, as a as an officer who beefed, essentially stopped, and there were no further complaints. Rogers filed EEOC charges. But contrary to the assertion of the city, there was plenty of notice to the city by means other than simply its own internal affairs process of the complaints that she had. And she did complain about Lieutenant Schrager in addition to Sergeant Coleni. The EEOC charges are in January of 97, Exhibit N, July of 97, Exhibit S, and December of 97, Exhibit RR, and they show the complaints of Rogers concerning the ratcheting up of the harassment that was being directed to her. Contrary to the city's assertion, almost every single act of harassment that followed Rogers' complaint to the police department consisted of acts initiated by and that can be traced to, based on the material evidence, Lieutenant Schrager. Her placement on the personnel concerns program, her requirements that she participate in a medical examination, the urine tests, the blood tests, her assignments, the denial of details, the refusal to transfer her to another district to get her out of the harassment, all of the acts that are listed in the brief of the plaintiff, the reply brief in seriatim, can be traced to Lieutenant Schrager. We believe that the district court improperly rejected plaintiff's affidavit, ignored and resolved factual discrepancies in favor of the city, the moving party, and did not appropriately consider the claims of the plaintiff. We requested to reverse the decision on summary judgment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. United States against Hodges is our next case this morning.